Hey, Naturalists, I'm Andy.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome back to Unnatural. How are you, Ryan? I know you've had an interesting day, like you were just telling me.
Yeah, the stars are not aligned. No, it's been a spacey week, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've had those weeks before myself. Actually, most weeks it feels like that for me, so...
I often realize that when I was a child, looking up at the adults around me, feeling like they all knew what was up.
They didn't know.
And now I'm an adult and I'm like, whoa, we're all just out here like fucking winging it. We don't know what the next moment is going to bring. Nope. And my best way to self-regulate is just to figure out, how do I let this go?
Well, you know how I deal with it. I talk about murder. Today, we're not going to talk about murder, though. It's not a murder. It's a disappearance.
All right.
And I don't think there's any chance it was even a murder at all. But it is very, very strange. And it all begins, or maybe ends, with a hurricane. Now, living in the Midwest, Ryan, you and I don't have to worry about hurricanes. But every year between June and November, a big part of the U.S., Mexico, and most of the Caribbean islands play an intense waiting game of sorts. I'm sure you've seen it on the news every year. It's hurricane season. Oh my God, what's going to happen this year? And 2017 was a big one. The U.S. Virgin Islands saw that big one in September of that year. That's when Hurricane Irma, a Category 5 storm with winds as high as 177 miles per hour, came crashing down on the small island of St. Thomas. And shortly thereafter was Hurricane Maria, another Category 5 hurricane. And if you know anything about hurricanes, Category 5 is as high as they go. So these were two major hurricanes, right? I guess I'm used to tornadoes, tornado season here in the Midwest. I would probably take that over a hurricane. What about you?
We don't have hurricanes. We don't have earthquakes. We don't have alligators. I can hide in a ditch from a tornado, but hurricanes, you'd like add water into it. And that's just
all the flooding.
An extra mile, I think.
Count me out. Well, St. Thomas itself is only about 30 square miles with a population of about 40,000 people. But there was widespread devastation unleashed on the island, with much of the infrastructure decimated and a death toll of around 120 people, along with countless others unaccounted for in the days following the brutal storm. One of these individuals who became unaccounted for a few days after the storm was 32-year-old Hannah Upp, a school teacher originally from Salem, Oregon. Now, one could be forgiven for initially believing that Hannah was just another one of the tragic victims from Hurricane Irma. But for those who have dug a little deeper into the backstory, a pattern began to emerge. You see, this wasn't the first time that Hannah Upp had disappeared off the face of the earth. In fact, as bizarre as it may sound, it happened twice before, which has led many of Hannah's friends and family to cling to the belief that she may still be alive somewhere. But what led this seemingly normal young woman to vanish without a trace, never to be seen or heard from again? And why do some people believe that she's still out there to this very day? This is the story of the three disappearances of Hannah Upp. So each and every year, there's on average, and I couldn't believe this when I read it, 600,000 missing persons cases reported in the U.S. alone. Now, The good news is the vast majority of these cases are resolved relatively quickly, but thousands aren't, which leaves friends and family to ponder the worst and hold out hope that their loved ones will soon be found. Most of these cases follow a similar arc. The person goes missing, a story develops as to why they went missing, and eventually, after painstaking efforts, they're either found, sometimes alive, sometimes not. But the story of Hannah Upp is much more than your average missing persons case. And it doesn't fit into that box that we've created for your average missing persons case either. And the most frustrating part of Hannah's case is that it remains unsolved to this very day. But how we got here is quite the story indeed. Hannah was born in Salem, Oregon in 1985 and grew up in a very unorthodox, outside of the norm way. I think it's fair to say that. A friend of the family described her as, quote, the princess of her church. And that was quite fitting, Ryan, because both her mother and father were pastors at Japanese American churches in Oregon. Neither of her parents were Japanese themselves, but they were both fluent in the language. And the Pacific Northwest has a pretty high Japanese population. Her mom's and dad's views and ideologies kind of diverged when Hannah was still pretty young and they got divorced. Her father, it sounds like he moved all over the place, teaching his form of gospel in places like Fiji, Guam, Zimbabwe, and even the Philippines. But it sounds like Hannah, for the most part, lived with her mom, who moved east to the Philadelphia area. And that's where Hannah went to college, at a prestigious private institute known as Bryn Mawr College. When Hannah began college, she was a devout evangelical Christian, but as it does with many people who are in their 20s, her formative years kind of shaped her into the person that she would become. One of her Hindu classmates once asked Hannah if he was going to go to hell because he didn't believe what she did. And instead of defending her beliefs and castigating him, Hannah began crying, telling him that she never thought of his point of view before. She was that rare type of person who wasn't set in her beliefs and could kind of change when presented new evidence. And let's face it, not everybody's like that.
I love me a good critical thinker.
Mm-hmm. And she was one. Her sophomore year, she called her mom crying after a former minister named Beth Stroud spoke at her college and told the story of how she was thrown out of her own ministry after telling the congregation that she was in a relationship with another woman. This had a profound effect on Hannah, who would herself freely admit to being in a relationship with a woman shortly thereafter. In September of 2008, at the age of 23, Hannah mysteriously vanished. Her friends, most of them former classmates at Bryn Mawr, posted thousands of flyers on signposts, in subway stations, coffee shops, you name it. But Hannah was gone. And she at this time was a teacher at Thurgood Marshall Elementary, a public school in Harlem, New York City, but she hadn't shown up for the first day of school. Her roommate had spotted her cell phone, her wallet, her passport, her Metro card, all of that was in her purse in her bedroom and filed a missing persons report. It's the kind of thing where if you're going to go somewhere for any length of time, you're probably going to be carrying your purse and cell phone and wallet with you.
Oh, absolutely.
She had said before she left that she was going for a run. So she wasn't expected to be gone very long, but the time started ticking by and the story ended up making national news headlines at the time. Because this went for weeks. I even found an article from 2008 titled, quote, Teacher 23 Disappears into Thin Air, end quote. And people had started to assume that the worst had happened. Was Hannah kidnapped? Had she been sexually assaulted and left to die somewhere, God forbid? Did she fall victim to being in the wrong place at the wrong time and maybe an incident on the streets in New York City? Well, no, In fact, she seemed to be perfectly fine as she was spotted in an Apple store checking her email in Midtown Manhattan 2 weeks after her disappearance.
What?
Yeah.
So she made national news and then she's just spotted somewhere.
Just chilling.
She had no idea that she had been gone?
Well, that's what we're going to get into here. That's a good question. So someone had recognized her in the Apple store because, again, she was all over the news and reported it to police. Police contacted Hannah's mother, who confirmed that, yeah, it was her daughter upon viewing the footage. And she later said, quote, "I knew it was her and I knew something was off." Another strange thing about this incident is the guy who recognized her actually walked up to her in the Apple store and said, "Hey, are you Hannah Up?" To which she responded, "No." But it was clearly her and he knew it was her. And the man would later say that it almost seemed like she was in some kind of a trance. And before you start thinking what maybe you're thinking, Hannah had no history with drugs or alcohol or anything like that. I don't know if that's the road you were going down in your mind, but that's what I thought at the time when I first read this.
No, I actually did not think that at all. So when you said it, I was like, I mean, that's a much more logical explanation. Why am I?
What were you thinking?
I was like, when I started this and I just was like, aliens. Was I onto something? I don't know. I guess let's keep going with the story.
We're going to keep going down the rabbit hole here, Ryan. There were other sightings of Hannah in the days that followed, and those who spotted her would also tell investigators that they thought she was in some kind of a daze or a trance when she was out in public. Nearly 3 weeks after she went missing, two men working at a ferry dock near the Statue of Liberty spotted something in the water. At first, it almost looked like a buoy. It was bobbing up and down. But the closer they looked and the more they stared at it, they realized it wasn't a buoy at all, but a person. It was Hannah Up. The two guys, they get in a small boat and they head towards the body, 100% expecting it to be a dead body. Just from the way it was bobbing up and down, it appeared to be lifeless. But when they pulled her out of the water, they were absolutely astonished, Ryan, that she was still alive and breathing.
What?
Yeah.
You are blowing my mind right now.
And it was quickly discovered that the woman they had rescued was the missing woman all over the news for 3 weeks, Hannah Up. And Hannah was rushed to the hospital. She did have a mild case of hypothermia and some sunburn, it sounds like, but otherwise she was okay, at least physically. And you're probably wondering what she said when they got her to come around and talk, because what could her reasoning be as to why she went missing and said she wasn't who she was and all of this stuff and ended up in the water face down? Well, once she was in an okay place to talk, Hannah baffled those at the hospital along with the investigators by telling them that she had absolutely no memory of what had happened, what had occurred in the past 3 weeks. Yeah. And she said that the last thing she remembered was leaving to go for a jog. Remember, she had told her roommates that she was going for a jog, and that's when she went missing. That's the last thing she remembered. Crazy, right?
That is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, there are logical explanations. The brain is a very complicated piece of tissue. There, we cannot even fathom what's happening inside the brain. No matter what we have done in the progress that we've made for these medical advances, the human brain is different in every single person. Yep. And so, like, that's a complicated matter.
Oh, I see what you did there.
And so I am so curious. I want to know what happened.
We do start to get a few answers here. She also said, by the way, she was kind of a bit fearful and suspicious of the police, not exactly believing them when they told her that she was missing for that long of a period. Hannah was eventually released, but she went to stay with her mother for a long period of time. One night, her mom heard her talking in her sleep, and she kept saying, quote, "I was at the lighthouse," end quote. But when she woke up, she had no memory of saying that, nor any memory of ever being at a lighthouse. She was going back and forth to and from the hospital at this time. And like you said, with the brain, they were doing a lot of tests. There were several neurological tests performed. She was undergoing psychiatric testing, the whole shebang. And to say that the doctors were stumped would be a bit of an understatement. But eventually, they diagnosed her with something extremely rare, even in the medical world. Have you ever heard of a condition called dissociative fugue?
Yes.
Have you?
I have heard of that. Yes.
I hadn't. So how have you heard of it?
When I went to college, I took psychology classes. And so we went over a lot of these different types of diagnoses with the brain. And it was like the information I latched on to the most because people intrigue me. I'm curious about what's going on inside their head when people say things. I'm kind of dissecting it like, well, why would that person say it that way? I'm pretty interested. So I definitely, it's weird that I would remember that, but yeah.
That is cool.
Dissociative fugue.
I had never heard of it. Honestly, I'm not surprised that you have because yes, you are one of those people.
I'm not. We are the weirdos, mister.
Yeah. But it's also known as Jason Bourne syndrome because
that doesn't surprise me.
That's what the character in those Jason Bourne movies suffers from, I guess. I think I've only seen one of those, but it's described by Psychology Today as, quote, a psychological state in which a person loses awareness of their identity or other important information about themselves and also engages in some form of unexpected travel, end quote. And usually it's precipitated by some kind of trauma that the person suffers, though Hannah couldn't recall ever having a huge traumatic event in her past. Episodes of this can last for days, weeks, or even years, and only 0.2% of the world is affected by this rare disorder. So, yeah, it's rare. Very rare. That's why most people have never heard of it.
It does make me wonder why the brain would want to protect itself in her case.
Right.
Because that's what that is. You know, a lot of people don't remember things from childhood. They don't remember abuse or trauma. They don't even know that it happened sometimes.
And then later
it's like cracked open. And then we're like, why would that happen? But it's because your brain is like, that's too much stimulation for what I'm trying to survive here. And so it'll just wall it off.
Yep. And they did try and crack it open a number of times, but they couldn't really figure it out. And there are some theories, which we're going to get to in a bit here, but again, Hannah went through a myriad of testing after her diagnosis to figure out how she got this condition, as you said. Because for the tiny fraction of the population that gets it, again, it's a major traumatic event in their life that triggers it. But after therapy, hypnosis, and a litany of other testing, neither Hannah, her mother, or the specialists could find any trauma that triggered this dissociative fugue to occur.
Into the vault it goes.
Right. Even though she had no idea why this happened, she seemed to be okay again, at least eventually. And she went back to teaching. She moved to Maryland to get a fresh start and got comfortable in her role in a new school where she would be teaching the Montessori method. Now, is that something you've heard of before? Because again, I hadn't heard of it.
I mean, I have three kids. I absolutely have heard of the Montessori method. Yeah.
It sounds kind of amazing after I read into this.
It is.
It essentially teaches kids real world experiences and lots of hands-on activities. Is that a kind of a Cliff Notes version of it?
Yeah. Some kids are suited to it and other kids are not.
Yeah.
I feel like
I would have been suited
to it. I should have worked on stuff like that when my son was little, but I had my last one when he turned two. And so it was a totally different stage of like, I can't put in all that effort. Sometimes we just have to like give ourselves a break and say, I can't do everything, but I can do what I can do, you know?
Well, it sounds like she was amazing at this. And
I just love that because
it's
hard work.
Yeah. And like you said, there's lots of hands-on activities. So you're really working with the kids there. And unfortunately, though, it wouldn't last for very long because almost exactly 5 years after her first episode, she had another one. And this one came in September of 2013. Police in Kensington, Maryland, were alerted to a wallet and a cell phone lying in the middle of a footpath in the quiet community. Kind of weird.
A little concerning.
The police called Hannah's mom, who, as you can imagine, was beside herself, probably thinking, oh no, not again. But luckily this time, Hannah was only missing for a few days. I say only a few days compared to what happened the time before. It was said that this time she kind of snapped out of her fugue state herself. And when she came to, she was again, just like the last time, in the water. This time, she was lying in a shallow creek next to a shopping cart. And
the fuck?
Yeah, that's what I said. She found a stranger when she came to and borrowed their cell phone to call her mom, who came and picked her up. And Ryan, this story was again all over the news. So much so that Hannah's mom had to release a statement to the press once she found Hannah was okay and said, quote, last night, our beloved Hannah was located safe and sound and is at home. We are inexpressibly relieved and rejoicing. We are tremendously grateful for your thoughts and prayers and attentiveness during the time she was missing, end quote. And just like her previous episode, she had no idea where she had been or what she had been doing in the 2 days she was missing.
That is wild.
Right? I can't imagine what that would be like, how scary that would be to, you know.
Well, with more than one occurrence of that, it makes me curious about what kind of like neuro hiccup was happening. Otherwise, she's being abducted, you know?
Right. I mean,
like probes and shit abducted. Because seriously, like, how else do you
explain it?
Like, what's going on inside the brain? Because it's like, okay, so I've had two heart surgeries.
Yeah.
And in that, they had to locate where the problem was while I was under anesthesia. I had tachycardic episodes and they had to perform two separate ablations 10 years apart. Wow. And when they were trying to locate it, they kind of went back to my mom and they were like, hey, if we can't get this to start, we won't know where, because they have to burn it. And then there's scar tissue. So it doesn't have an electrical,
I know, you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's not conducting the electrical impulses.
Right. Yeah.
So that makes me curious about what kind of like hiccup is happening in the brain if she is going into this dissociative state and maybe nothing is happening to her and it's just happening.
Yeah.
Kind of like, over time, like strokes happen, and there are all these curiosities about our own human existence that we don't understand.
Usually, you're right, though. There's a cause and effect, and
they
can't figure out the cause here. But
so maybe it's just happening.
Maybe, I don't know. But those who were looking into her case noticed a couple of similarities that I don't know might have some sort of connection here. One. As mentioned, both episodes occurred in the month of September. And two, they both ended in water.
Okay.
Coincidence? I don't know. But no one knew what to make of these connections. But it was definitely noted. Maybe that's a coincidence. Well, around a year after this episode, Hannah decided that she again needed a new start. And she was moving off the U.S. mainland entirely and onto the Virgin Islands. Again.
Right in the middle of a big, big water body?
Yeah.
Okay.
Big body of water. I know.
Maybe go work in a, like, in the Midwest.
Let's go to Montana or something.
Oh, yeah. But, Utah.
Let's just stay away from the Salt Lake, that's for sure. But anyway. again, she worked as a teacher, and by all accounts, she was just living her best life out there in this tropical Caribbean paradise. She had been living there for 3 years when Hurricane Irma hit in September of 2017. September. Hannah survived Hurricane Irma, although it was said that her new home had widespread damage. And she was devastated over the loss, not to mention another Category 5 hurricane was on its way, this one named Maria. So
this woman cannot catch a break.
She can't. And a few days after the storm, Hannah, it sounds like she drove to the house of her ex-boyfriend named Joe, who was a scuba instructor. When she got there, she noticed most of his belongings were gone. And Joe, just like a lot of other people, was getting off the island because of this impending hurricane. And there were mercy ships that were giving people free rides off the island. Hannah drove to the marina, found Joe, and said goodbye to him. And it sounds like they spent a couple of hours together. And he even jokingly asked her if she wanted to come along. And he said that she thought about it for a while and finally said that she wouldn't want to. After Hannah left Joe and left the marina, she never used her phone again.
Do we like Joe? Is he okay?
No, I think Joe's fine. Yeah, Joe's okay.
Okay.
In the next couple of days, her friends and coworkers kind of described Hannah as going through the motions, and she wasn't very talkative at all, almost like she was in a daze or a trance. And in hindsight, many of them now wonder if she was already sort of starting to slip into another one of her fugue episodes. Hannah Upp was last seen the morning of Thursday, September 14th, 2017, leaving her home in St. Thomas in between Hurricane Irma and Maria. She had told her friends that she was going out for a swim before going to school, but she never made it to school that day, nor did she ever make it home again. her car.
So when she disappeared.
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry.
No,
when
you're okay.
She disappeared the second time. Who saw her last?
That was in Maryland. So the first disappearance was in New York City. Second one was in Maryland.
Yep, and she said, I'm going to go for a run.
Yeah.
The second one, was there any information on
I couldn't find who saw her last in that one. If it was maybe a roommate again.
Because my curiosity is when they talk about the dissociative fugue and this, you know, this being a symptom, the sudden urge to travel.
Yeah.
The first one, she says, I'm going for a run. And the third one, she says, I'm going for a swim.
Yeah.
So she's like already kind of this urge to go do something, like this physical urge to move her body. That's a very interesting.
That's a good point.
I
hadn't thought of that before, but now I am curious as to what that second one would be. But her car was found a couple of days later. It was on Sunday, September 17th. So 3 days later, it was at Sapphire Beach, which is apparently was a place that she really loved and would go snorkeling there a lot. And in her car was all of her identification, her passport, her credit cards, money, all of her valuables were left behind. Her keys and her sandals had been strung along the beach. And a report was filed with the local police. An extensive search was done on the 17th, also on Monday, September 18th. But then they had to stop searching because Hurricane Maria was coming down on them. And they had to get to safety. There have been many efforts by her friends and search and rescue teams since then to try and find her or her remains. But she has not been found to this very day. And that leads us to what the hell happened. And I've talked about this one time and time again, Ryan. And I do feel like it's worth noting this. Occam's razor, which is the simplest explanation, is the most likely outcome. So what is the simplest explanation in the Hannah Upp case? Or at least at, you know, this tragic end that she probably had. Well, in my opinion, it's that she drowned somewhere in the Caribbean Sea shortly before Hurricane Maria, or maybe during Hurricane Maria. Who knows?
Well, and she could have ended up in the water and then been eaten by a shark or any of number of those other explanations.
Caught in a riptide. Yeah. But that's the simplest explanation, but this is not a simple case, obviously. Hannah's friends developed a lot of theories about what went down, but they said most of these were probably unlikely. But you know what? Her surviving after all that time in New York City was a little improbable as well. And one of her friends said, quote, there are pockets of communities in the bush and she could be living there. Other people said, hey, Hannah was fluent in Spanish. Maybe she got on a boat to Puerto Rico or somewhere in South America even and is living down there right now. And maybe she still hasn't come out of her fugue state. Again, those are unlikely, but I would say they're possible. And
they are possible because she was clearly functional enough to end up in different places and be spotted. Yep. Doing things, checking emails, you know, like the brain is off, but it's like on autopilot.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what I'm getting from this.
It's kind of like me at 3 o'clock in the morning. The actual lead investigator into this case said himself, hey, she's been gone for this long now. What is it? Going on seven years, I think. He said, it's very unlikely that she'll ever be found, but I've seen some crazy things happen with missing persons before. So it's not entirely impossible that she's alive.
Well, and then there's those states where people end up flip-flopping between personalities.
Yeah.
And sometimes the brain just goes, whoop, I'm just going to be this person now.
Yeah.
We don't know why. Different parts of the brain shut down, other parts turn on, and now it's like a different human being altogether.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're aware of it, sometimes they aren't. And that is what intrigues me about the human brain, because, you know, with the human spirit, that's just the electrical impulses that keep our body working.
Yeah.
And without the electrical impulse, without, you know, whatever that is in the body, it's just, it starts to fall apart and degrade and turn into bone and dust. So whatever is happening in her, what was happening in her brain. But when we talk about like the human spirit and how that, like, we're just in this vessel, and sometimes the vessel does not function properly, you know, whether that is in a physical way or in a mental way. And this person was having these experiences in their brain. And it's like, maybe this was literally just a condition that she had, that maybe you had to literally be hooked up to wires at the time of the occurrence
to figure it
to
out,
to even catch it.
Yep.
To even see that it's there.
Yeah.
And that's like, I feel for this woman, because she had such a hard time trying to just live a normal life after each of these experiences. And then she ends up missing entirely. And I think we can agree that we do kind of hope that she's just out there living a new, entirely different life.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe her brain just flipped her over to a new personality and she's out there somewhere happy.
I'd like to think maybe she's like in Ecuador or somewhere right now teaching kids and living under a different name or something like that. But there are some things to note here. One of them, an adult skeleton washed ashore on an uninhabited island near St. Thomas in September of the next year, 2018.
What?
Yeah.
In September again?
In September.
Holy biscuits and gravy.
Right. Now, according to Name Us, which is a resource for missing, unidentified and unclaimed persons across the United States, they were not able to identify the remains because they were too decomposed to retain any kind of identifying information. So it is unknown who those remains belong to. But it's worth noting, there have also been a number of potential Hannah Upp sightings over the years. This happens a lot, though, with missing persons cases all the time. Some of those have actually been posted on the Facebook page that was created called Find Hannah Upp, which is still on Facebook to this day. I actually went on there recently to check it out. So you can see for yourself where some of these sightings have been. But in March of 2021, there was a statement released from her mother regarding her daughter's case that said, quote, "There are no immediate active leads at this time. We continue to pursue any credible leads," end quote. But something else I found interesting that I thought maybe you would too. Her mother, her mom would later say that she herself had a dissociative fugue episode.
Ooh.
And she didn't know what to call it at the time and didn't think about it for years, apparently. But shortly after her divorce, she was driving to some sort of ministry conference for work, and she blacked out and ended up beside the Willamette River in Oregon.
Are you kidding me?
How crazy is that?
So, well, that leads me to think there's a connection in maybe genetics.
Mother, daughter. Or maybe it was the divorce itself that spurred it on for both of them. I don't know. But
well, I'm still thinking like they're genetically the same, you know, like, not the same, but like they're from the same genetic line. Yeah. Conditions get passed down. I mean, like after people started paying attention, like with my heart stuff, then all of a sudden there are all these women on my mom's side who are like, oh, I have that.
Right.
And oh, okay. Now all of a sudden we're aware that there's a genetic thing.
Yeah. But I guess it's not that surprising when you think about it.
No, it isn't.
That her mom had this happened to her as well. And she said she asked herself, why did I go to the water? And she said, quote, I do remember feeling comfort, finding myself there. Apparently, she was there for a number of hours. She said that she had lost the ability to understand categories. She said that she no longer had a chronological measure of time. And she said she no longer experienced herself in a specific place. Things like that. And after a number of hours, she kind of snapped out of it enough to drive home. And she said, quote, I fully came to when I saw my children's faces and thought, oh my God, they're worried. End quote. It's just crazy. Crazy to think about.
That is...
It's like we were saying like earlier.
Reading a book with a cliffhanger at the end.
Yeah. Well, or it's like...
I'm fully invested and now I just have to speculate.
Or it's like reading a book, but there's a bunch of pages in the middle missing.
I bet that's what her life is like sometimes.
We just don't have all the answers.
No, and without finding Hannah, we'll never understand what happened.
No.
Not just to her in the process of experiencing this state, also how? How does this happen? And like I said, sometimes these things literally have to be hooked up to wires at the time of the event in order to locate it. Like with the heart surgery, they're like, hey, if we can't get this heart muscle to go into a tachycardic episode, we don't know where the problem is. Yeah. And
that's where we're at right now with medicine and with medical technology. I think 100 years from now, things will be different. And we probably will be able to figure things like this out much easier.
Yeah. But, and we won't even, you and I won't even get to figure that out. Isn't that annoying as shit?
Yeah. just like if we were to show somebody from 100 years ago something that we do for medicine, or if we were to tell them, hey, by the way, bleeding yourself with those leeches doesn't work, they'd say, no, you're crazy. Yes, it does.
Witchcraft.
Well, if you guys have any theories as to what happened to Hannah Up, or maybe you know of somebody who's had similar episodes or you've seen something like that in your life, you can always reach out to us on our socials. You can find us on Instagram, Unnatural the Podcast. Find us on Facebook, Unnatural True Crime Podcast. Or just send us an email, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, make sure to like, follow, and rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we will talk to you next time. But in the meantime, make sure to make good choices.
And don't get got.
Or just send us an email, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. We haven't gotten a lot of emails lately. In fact, I just realized that as I said it, Emily used to check the emails. So I'm wondering if she just stopped doing it and if we've been getting emails that I haven't been looking for. Maybe I'll take a look at that. Maybe I'll take
that
a look.
That might
here.
Be worth doing. Yeah.
Should I give a tease? Should I tell you a tease as to what next one is about?
You can tease.
It is. Get your mind out of the gutter. It is.
Are you a tease, Andy?
Not for a long
time. Is that
what
you enjoy doing in your spare time? Yeah. Being a tease.
I'm sure there's a few ladies out there that might say that, but it's been a while. let me try and think of what the... Okay, so next... you're getting me all hot and bothered now. Next week, we are going to talk about some murders that took place on a deserted island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Murder.
Gonna be a murder. Crazy murder.
Someone
anyway.
Gonna get murdered.
somebody's gonna get murdered. We'll talk about it next week. We'll talk about it next week.
Brain is off. It's after 8:30 p.m. Right. What a fascinating piece of meat, you know? What? Like, when I was in college,
that's what my ex-girlfriend
said about
our
biology portion. He's turned me into a newt. I got better. I wish I were a newt.
Well, you never know. Hey, you know what I wish? I wish I were a Groot. I saw my opportunity.
I love talking to you.
I went for it. How often is that ever going to happen again? I wish I were a newt. I wish I were a Groot.
We should be writing fucking Dr. Seuss books.
I am Groot.
That little sound is the bobblehead Groot.
How much money?
About.
How much money do you think Vin Diesel made for just saying "I am Groot" in all those movies?
Too much.
I mean, I guess he said it in different ways, but still.
I for sure wish that I could just do something that simply and just poof, money.
Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be nice? Wow.
Although, I did kind of have a girl crush on, well, I had a crush on Vin Diesel when I was a preteen.
Was it the shiny bald head or the muscles?
No, it was him in Riddick.
The Chronicles of Riddick. Yeah, I remember that.
Yes, The Chronicles of Riddick. I fucking loved those movies.
Those were good. Those were good back in the day. I didn't, yeah, like, and then he got like Triple X. No, I was not.
Yeah, no thanks. I think I just was like, Outcast.
I like
into
how you
prison.
Said. I'm going to take the little snippet of you saying, and I'm going to put it at the very end of our episode. Because if you listen to our last episode at the very end, like after the music is done, you're going to have to go back and listen now. At the very end, right after the music is done, there's a little snippet of you going, oh, yeah. I couldn't help myself.
I should start charging you for using clips of me doing and saying weird shit. So, like, I'm going to trademark my voice now.
Oh, God.
Like, the brain is off, but it's just, like, on autopilot.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of what I'm getting from this.
It's kind of like me at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Or me after I've like, oh
well, and
body's
even
tired.
Spotted something in the water at first. God, my stomach just growled. I wonder if that got on the microphone. At first... Sorry.
Mm-hmm.